listen to remember and accept. I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words.
Oh, good morning, everyone.
Morning.
See, a few more people snuck in here while I was in the Doksan room. But good morning, everyone, again. Ah. So Kate is somewhere down south in California, around San Francisco, partying it up with some old friends that she knew way back when she was a back to the land girl in her early 20s, running an organic farm in New Brunswick. So they're all gathering together to celebrate someone's 70th birthday, or a couple of them are turning 70. Today, I thought I'd like to talk about one of the chants that we do, one of the Sino-Japanese chants, the chants that we chant often when we're doing a well-being ceremony for someone who is ill. And that's the Enmeijiku Kanongyo, which is on page
6.
So you can just have a look at that. There is an English translation there as well, but I'm going to be talking mostly from the Sino-Japanese. This chant is chanted in all the Zen centers and monasteries throughout North America, Europe, and of course Japan and China. I've always enjoyed and really liked this chant, the Enmeijiku Kanongyo. And I think it's partly because I don't have much ability to memorize poems or jokes or lines from plays or those pithy one-line zingers that some people have the ability. But I managed to memorize this short chant fairly quickly in Japan when I was living there and practicing at a Zen temple. And for me, it has been a great source of solace over the years. But I didn't memorize it for that purpose. It was only to be able to join in with the chants that were going on in the Zen temples in Japan that I was participating at. And then, of course, the Zen centers here in North America. And in some Zen temples, this is a really robust chant. For example, both at the Great Vow Monastery in Oregon and the Rinzai Center that's called One Drop on Whidbey Island, they chant this with some vigor and they chant it very quickly. During one retreat or session that I was participating in at One Drop, well, the day there begins at 4 a.m. You get up and you chant this full volume 108 times. And 108 being kind of symbolic of our delusions. There's a various calculation which I don't quite remember. But at any rate, it's a great way to wake up, and no caffeine necessary before you begin the first sit. At some point in my life, chanting the Enmeijiku Kanongyo became a practice that I took up in times of deep distress and sadness, when my mind would not settle on my breath, and my body was very agitated. Once, Jan Chosen Bays, who is the co-abbot at Great Vow Monastery, told me, when times are darkest and we're lost in our pain, the only thing that will give aid is chanting. But if that chanting is going to be of benefit during those times, we have to lay the foundation of that practice now. Over the years, I've chanted this, well, probably countless times. But I remember chanting the Inmei Jikku Kanengyo as an aid, as I sat in the hospital with my dying mother. For several days before she died, she was unable to respond in any way, just lying there in the bed. And I quietly chanted the Inmei Jikku Kanengyo as I sat with her, because it helped to keep me present and it helped to keep my heart open. Just chanting, sometimes for her, sometimes for me, sometimes for all beings who have lost or will lose their mother. I guess to an extent, it really doesn't matter what one chants. But it helps if one has a strong connection to the chant or to the poem, so that it smoothly makes its way off the tongue or off the mind's tongue. Chanting the Inmei Jikku Kanengyo, I maintained connection to the breath, the voice, and the body, and to something bigger than that tight knot of grief, anger, and despair, and that ever-repeating story about how this should not be happening. And that is what the Inmei Jikku Kanengyo really is all about, I believe. It's about connection, and it's about intimacy. It is a sutra, kind of one of the main teachings of the Buddha. And it's been part of the Zen tradition for hundreds and hundreds of years. Now, we say all the sutras originated from the Buddha. At least that's what tradition holds. But we know this particular short sutra began in China. And has been chanted in China, in Japan, Korea, and other places, as I mentioned earlier. It is traditional at Soto Zen centers, like this one here, to chant the Inmei Jikku Kanengyo 7 times when members of the community or family or friends are sick or in some kind of deep distress. The chanting is an offering of support, and also a focusing of our intention on those facing perhaps a medical emergency, a long, difficult illness, or some other kind of crisis. But of course, it's not only for those around us who are sick or in distress. It's for us. It's for us too. Just as the Bodhisattva vows that we take include the person giving them voice, we also chant for our own troubled hearts and our own sick bodies. Chanted daily in Zen temples throughout Japan, and now, of course, in North America and Europe, etc., it's one of the few sutras that is still mostly chanted in Sino-Japanese. Most of the other ones are done in the language of the country, English, French, German. So I thought, because we chant it in Sino-Japanese, let's have a closer look at the actual meaning of what we're chanting. And I'm going to be talking about the Chinese characters that actually make up this chant. I was going to bring a copy of the Chinese characters in, but How many people here read Chinese? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll try bring one in next time so people can look. So the topic of sutras in general, these teachings of the Buddha, is very complex. And as I mentioned, the basic idea is that they were all spoken by the Buddha. But of course, this is not the literal truth. It's more a poetic truth, or a kind of an acknowledgement that this text that we're reading, or this text that we're chanting, is profound, full of meaning, and worthy of respect and deep contemplation. I think that's what a sutra really is. And the Inme Jikku Kanungyo was never written or composed in the original languages, the Pali or the Sanskrit or other early languages of India, but in Chinese. At least that's what scholars are telling us these days. And it was perhaps originally a hymn of praise or a verse of practice focused on Kannon or Kanzeon, the bodhisattva of compassion, the embodiment of compassion. And although it's part of the official Buddhist canon in China and Japan, we know, or at least scholars tell us, it was composed long after the Buddha died, many years ago. But the verse begins, I think, in a very powerful way. Kanzeon, the verse begins, evoking, bringing forth the bodhisattva of compassion. And the name Kanzeon translates something like one who perceives the cries of the world. One who perceives the cries of the world or hears the cries of the world. It's a beautiful image. Don't we all want someone to hear us? Yeah, we want to be helped and we want our troubles to go away. But our first inclination is, please hear me. Hear my cry of pain, my cry of distress. Listen to me. See me. Hear me. Connect to me. Kanzeon is, again, the Sino-Japanese. Sino, it simply means Chinese, right? So it's Chinese-Japanese is what it means. The name of the bodhisattva that we also chant in the Heart Sutra. And the Sanskrit name is Avalokiteshvara. Remember, Avalokiteshvara bodhisattva, when deeply practicing prajna paramita, clearly saw that all five aggregates are empty and thus relieved all suffering. Shariputra, form does not differ from emptiness, emptiness does not differ from form, etc., etc., etc. So here in the Heart Sutra, Avalokiteshvara, or Kanzeon, this very bodhisattva of compassion, instructs the monks of the Buddha, particularly Shariputra, all about wisdom. Here in that sutra, the Heart Sutra, compassion and wisdom are shown as one. There's no difference between compassion and wisdom. But I could talk about that for quite a while, so let's leave that for another day. I should say that in Asia, Kanzeon, this bodhisattva of compassion, not only hears the cries of the world, but she responds in a way that's appropriate to relieve the suffering. And the Buddhist literature of China, Japan, and Korea are full of stories of Kanzeon coming to the aid of those in need, whether they ask for it or they don't. Dogen Zenji, the Japanese monk way back in the 1200s who brought went to China and brought this form of Buddhism back from China to Japan. When he was on his perilous journey by ship to China, apparently during a great storm, he called out to Kanzaion for assistance. I don't know if he understood Kanzaion to be a force outside of himself at that time or not. But generally, the Zen understanding is that Kanzaion, this embodiment of compassion, is none other than your own intimate, limitless, compassionate heart. Kanzaion, and in China and in Japan, it's given a feminine form. Kanzaion embodies or personifies loving kindness and compassion. And when we invoke, when we call forth Kanzaion, we invoke something from within ourselves, a profound and boundless intimacy. So when Dogen called out to Kanzaion, perhaps he was calling out to something deeper than his scared self, this self that was fearful of losing its life in the great storm. When I chanted Kanzaion, the Inmejiku Kanongyo, when I chanted that beside my dying mother, I was evoking a heart that could hold the sadness, anger, and even hopelessness. Kanzaion may not save us in the ways we would like or the ways that we imagine, but nevertheless, we are saved. Kanzaion. Next line I want to talk about is the Namu Butsu. Right? Namu Butsu. Namu Butsu means homage to Buddha. But actually, I don't think this is an appropriate translation. It strikes me more of a declaration of our Buddha nature. Mel Sojin Weitzman, one of Norman's teachers, Norman who is the founding teacher of this center. And until recently, Mel Weitzman was abbot at the Berkeley Zen Center, and he died recently. He wrote, Namu Butsu really means one with Buddha. That's how he translated it, one with Buddha. And that's kind of an interesting translation, too. That Buddha is not sitting on the altar up there, but Buddha is sitting right on your cushion, right on your chair. The Buddha is not 2,500 years old. The Buddha is 24, 65, 32, 44, 77, that's how old the Buddha is. The Buddha is now looking out through your eyes, hearing these words through your ears. Namu Butsu, one with Buddha. At this moment, we may be confused. At this moment, we may feel cranky and suffering, and wishing we could have tea and cookie now and not have to listen to this Dharma talk. And yet, we are far, far more than those thoughts. When sitting in meditation, in Zazen, we return to that understanding that we are more. Or at least we begin to open to what is beyond the confused, the suffering, the cranky, and the desires of cookies. And this teaching about being one with Buddha is developed further in the next two lines. It goes, yo butsu u in, yo butsu u en. And yo simply means with, or sometimes it's, you can, and. So it's kind of like, and butsu, of course, means Buddha. So u, the u in the first line, is kind of means like is. And in means a direct cause. A little bit confusing, eh? So, direct cause or fundamental cause. So, with Buddha, the direct cause. And then, yo butsu u en, the en means an indirect cause or enabling conditions. So these two phrases are a little bit queer. Now they're ambiguous. And I think deliberately so, because they're pointing out how you experience a Buddha nature and something that can't be put straightforwardly into words. So the first line, yo butsu u in, remember in means direct, I think it is an ineffable experience of nature, of our Buddha nature. Perhaps sometimes we taste this when we settle into our meditation practice, a deep spaciousness. Or maybe you experience it when you crest a long, steep, and rocky hill, and suddenly there's the vast landscape before you, right there before your eyes. And all thoughts of that sweaty, toily time you spent trying to get to the top just drop away. And for a moment or two, you become one with that vista. Direct experience. Yo butsu u in. The next line, yo butsu u en. En refers to enabling conditions. So that may be the long, hard walk up the hill, or it may be the sitting on the cushion for hour after hour, or whatever suffering that we experience, we face it in its myriad forms. It's the times when nothing special happens. But there is, perhaps in those times, a sense of trust or a sense of faith. Even in the times of stress or despair or sadness, we are still one with Buddha. We are still our Buddha nature. The word in, this indirect cause, refers actually also to seed. Oh, pardon me, in refers to seed. This direct cause refers to seed. En refers to the conditions. So the soil, the sunlight, the water that's necessary for the seed to sprout and grow. The seed of our Buddha nature must also be attended to in the same way. We need to create those enabling conditions so it can grow and blossom. So I think this kind of terse passage, yo butsu u in, yo butsu u en, tells us that our Buddha nature is not something that's lost and gained. It's with us from the very beginning. And yet, as Dogen tells us in writing, it must be actualized. We must create the enabling conditions and allow it to come forth fully in this world. So the next lines. Kapo Soen. Often this is translated as affinity with Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, the three treasures. And again, we see this use the same word of en, it's the same character, telling us that the three treasures, this Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, are supporting causes or their enabling conditions for us. They are our aids. They help us. Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha are the supports or the framework for us on our journey to fully embrace our true nature. The Buddha, perhaps standing as an example, the Dharma or instructions as skillful ways to guide us on this journey, and the Sangha as good friends, supporting us, encouraging us as we travel this path. Next lines, Jōraku Gajō, Jōraku Gajō. These literally translate as this: permanence, happiness, true self, and purity. Permanence, happiness, true self, and purity. Now, interestingly, these are the four qualities of Buddha's life, as expounded in the Mahaparinirvana Sutra. These are qualities that the Buddha apparently had. But they're also the four qualities of the Absolute, or of the Buddha nature, or of our true nature. These are qualities that we have as well. And much could be said about these. But these four virtues, these four qualities, are the opposites to the qualities of the conventional world that we experience. The conventional world is described by the Buddha. And those qualities of the conventional world being, of course, impermanence, everything changes, dissatisfaction, or dukkha, non-self, anatta, right, no self, and emptiness. So in the Tibetan tradition, Tibetan Buddhist tradition, they often talk about what's described as sky mind. Sky, as in that sky up above us. Such a beautiful image. An endless sky. The sky has no beginning and no end. That's the meaning of jo, or permanence, in this sense. It's like an endless sky. Our true nature has that quality. So permanence here doesn't mean something frozen, like a marble statue, but something more like, I would say, the principle of the conservation of energy. Remember that from our high school physics? And I think I have this right. It goes like this. The total energy of an isolated system remains constant. It is said to be conserved over time. Energy can neither be created nor destroyed. Rather, it transforms from one form to another. That's permanence. We may call it dynamic permanence. Jo, that's jo. Raku is the endless and full enjoyment of the present moment. The full enjoyment of the present moment, fully embracing this present moment, whatever it gives us. Ga is the true self, or the big mind, or Buddha nature, or the Absolute. which goes beyond all notions of self and non-self. And finally, Jo is purity or clarity, meaning free from any sense of separateness. There's no stain, nothing unstained, everything pure, unified, nothing left out. So these are the qualities we evoke in ourselves when we chant the Inmejikku Kanangyo. This is why we chant it in times of distress, to remind ourselves there's something more, something larger. It helps us to meet our life moment after moment, no matter how difficult or how confused this moment is. And then the next two lines, very beautiful. These are my favorite lines. Chonen kanzeon, bonen kanzeon. Cho means morning, and nen means conscious or conscious thought. So what this means is, in the morning, turn your mind to kanzeon. Turn your mind to compassion. In the morning and throughout the day, evoke your compassion. I was thinking about this, you know, how often I wake up, maybe you do too, with a to-do list in my mind. Right? Or maybe it's worries about my relationships or work or money. Perhaps our practice should be immediately upon opening our eyes in the morning to cultivate thoughts of compassion before our feet hit the floor. What would the day be like then? May everyone, including me, have ease today. May all beings be satisfied. May my heart be open to whatever arises, instead of, let's see, I got to go to the dentist and then get the oil changed in the car. And what's the last thing? I should have written that down last night. Shit, I should have written it down. Bonen kanzeon means, bo means night. So in the evening, throughout the night, turn your mind to kanzeon. So here the Inmejikku Kanangyo is exhorting us to practice day and night, return to compassion. Return to intimacy. Don't get caught in your stories. Don't get caught in separateness. And then the last two lines, Nen Nen Ju Shinki, Nen Nen Hu Ri Shin. Well, Nen Nen means thought after thought. And Ju, Nen Nen Ju, means to follow. And Shin means heart-mind. And ki means to arise. So thought after thought arises in the vast heart of who we are, like clouds in an endless sky. And sitting in Zazen, thought follows thought, and we're not separate from those. And at the same time, we're not separate from the vast sky. Thoughts are just clouds. Part of us, yes, but so is the vast sky. This background that the thoughts appear upon. Remember this. And then the next line reinforces this. Nen nen huiri shin. So just as above, nen nen means thought after thought. Hu means not. Di means separate. Not separate. Not separate, thought after thought. Not separate from the heart-mind, which is shin, right? Heart-mind. Our most intimate sense of who we are. Nothing is separate from the great heart mind, the vast sky. Clouds and sky, most intimate. Thoughts, heart mind, kanzeon, compassion, most intimate. One thing that's marvelous about the Sino-Japanese language, written in characters, it's very poetic, very terse. And as a result, many ways we can translate this. For example, in the Chinese, there is no personal pronouns. I, you, we, they, nothing's there. And so when we translate in English, we kind of insert them. But there's nothing there. It opens it wide. So inclusive. So many ways we could translate this 10-phrase sutra. And we have one there that we sometimes chant in English, but not that often. And so I was trying to think, how would I sum up this kanzeon, this emeijiku kanon-gyo? And I guess I would say this. It's a kind of Cole's Notes of practice. Does everybody know what Cole's Notes are? Do you know Cole's Notes?
These days it would be practice for dummies.
Oh, yes, probably practice for dummies. It's kind of like that. Cole's Notes was, every high school student had several copies of it when they were asked to analyze Moby Dick or something, right? And it was kind of like a little thin volume you could buy for a couple of bucks, and it would have, you know, hopefully enough information in it so you wouldn't have to read Moby Dick. And you just like make your little essay and get your mark. So that's a Cole's Notes. It's kind of like an abbreviated summary notes and a little bit of analysis for you. So I think it's a kind of Cole's Notes of practice. And I would say it's a prayer. A prayer for deepening intimacy with the world. And a skill, a tool, to help us face the very dark moments of our life. But as Jan Chosenbei said, as mentioned earlier, we need to practice now if it's going to be of any benefit for us when we really are in a dark time of our life. So we're going to be chanting this in the service. And I'd like to thank you all for listening. And we'll end with a chant, and then we'll just move right into service.
May our intention